It's the third Wednesday of February 2020, and here we are in Bloomington, this time with Mayor John Hamilton. This time we're in City Council Chambers from your office, taking a little break from upstairs. Thanks for having us.
Nice to see you, Joe. Welcome to City Council Chambers, indeed.
Yeah. So we just received word yesterday, a press release from your office, that the city is going to redesign the 4th Street parking garage without the Wansells Realty building, even though this is still tied up in the appeals process. So what's the reasoning behind that?
Well, you know, we had litigation about the eminent domain suit. We were disappointed very late last year. We had a trial court here that ruled the public garage was not a public use, which we're disappointed in. But even at that time, we said we really need to pursue the two options of either we're going to get the property, which we hoped, or we won't. And so we did begin the design on the property, the smaller footprint property. We had a second decision from the same court that wouldn't let us amend the complaint. So we're still figuring out whether the appeal route makes sense. We are preserving our options to appeal that, which we think was a wrong decision and ill-advised. But we think probably we need to proceed with the design and construction on the land that we have, which is what we're going to do. And that'll start in earnest. We have a design that's going in front of the Plan Commission in a couple weeks, I think. And it's unfortunate. It's a little smaller. We'll have to maybe be a little taller and not quite what we want, but we'll make it work. And we can still pursue the appeal and even expand that garage if we get the chance at the time. But appeals take probably 2 years, so we don't want to wait for that.
Yeah. Well, why appeal again? I mean, this is probably about the third time going at that property.
Yeah, well, we've only had one court rule on it, the trial court here at Monroe County, and we really think they didn't get it right. That's why we would appeal. The decision that says a city can't build a garage that is for the public and that is all for the public and has less than 5% of it, which is required by city code to make available to retail or non-parking, that shouldn't make a public garage not a public garage. And so it's kind of the principle of the thing for the appeal to make clear this is a public garage and a public purpose.
So in terms of the space, parking space, would the same building in the same footprint, are we talking about the same number of spaces, or does this decrease the amount now?
Yeah, we either have to add, to get the same number of spaces, we have to add a deck, makes it a little taller, or if we don't add a deck, we'll lose 80 or 90 spaces. So it's a kind of a trade-off. We'll be working at that with the Plan Commission and the City Council, which will.
Okay, so that hasn't been decided yet, per se. That's just part of the design process.
We're designing it for the 500 plus spaces that we think the market needs, and we'll see how that rolls out.
But the commercial space could come back.
It can, and it will, because the city code says you're supposed to have commercial space there.
I have to ask you, of course, about the news that also that broke over the weekend, and that was the Schooner Creek Farm lawsuit saying that the city violated free speech, First Amendment rights, something that you've been talking about all along, which you explained many times to us, especially on the show. But the reason they say is that they couldn't be restricted from the market was that the city enforced different rules. Did the city enforce different rules?
No, Joe, it's unfortunate. We do get sued. Of course, cities get sued all the time. I think this suit is meritless. We're confident that we've taken appropriate and legal steps all through the process to honor the Constitution and the laws and to protect everybody's rights. And, it can happen. We get sued when people disagree with that, but we're confident that the courts will agree with our approach.
So now what happens now? Will this play out in court?
If it keeps going. I mean, we're going to defend our actions, and we feel comfortable and confident that we've been even-handed and appropriate in all of this. If they continue to pursue, it'll go to a court trial and hearing. It could be settled. It could be a court could dismiss it on summary judgment. So we'll protect the city's interest in this. You know, we've worked very hard through the farmers market to protect the market. Protect the vendors, those who make a living there, and also to protect the rights of First Amendment for everyone, for vendors and for patrons and visitors. And I think we've been very careful and explicit about that. Look, I've been very explicit too that I think white supremacy is a terrible ideology, and it's an abhorrent thing when it arises, as we've seen. And I can continue to say that, and I speak on behalf of the city and myself, that ideology is a scourge. However, people have a right to believe what they want to believe in this country, and we'll continue to protect their right to believe that.
There's also a tort claim kind of on the other side of the farmers market controversy regarding a woman who says she was wrongfully arrested for protesting in front of Schooner Creek Farm. We haven't had a chance to talk to you because that happened after the last time we talked as well. So, but that's not a lawsuit, though. So there's a difference between a tort
claim. It is a lawsuit now.
The tort claim, that is now a lawsuit.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
And that's they both begin as tort claims acts. And this one is from a protester who felt we weren't even handed in dealing with protesters. And I guess it is important for people to know we vendors are in a contractual relationship with us, and we have a right to insist on certain behaviors. There are certain limits. We can't require them to believe things that we want them to believe, but we can require them to act certain ways. Patrons to the market, we have rules about when you can bring a sign and when you can protest. They're called time, manner, and place restrictions, and we do have those in the market. We don't allow in the core marketplace people to have a major political demonstration. You can't have a political candidate holding a sign in the middle of the market, vote for me. And we have to do that even-handedly, which we do. No matter what you believe, we don't let you bring a sign and protest in the middle of the market, and that's what that lawsuit is about. But I think this reflects that the community is, there's a lot of strong feelings about this, and I appreciate that. You know, we made the decision to proceed with the market because so many people in the community love the market, want the market to be there, as do the vast majority of vendors. That was a key thing. They really want the city to keep the market going, which we plan to do, and we'll navigate through it another year this year. I encourage everyone to come to the market, express your views appropriately, but come and buy the vegetables and the food, fresh food. It's a terrific place. It'll open in April.
So then has the city responded to, I believe that was Kara Kadu, with that, what was a tort claim and now you say is a lawsuit. Has the city responded to that?
I don't know if we've formally responded in the litigation yet. We have in the Tort Claims Act part of it. Again, that lawsuit we also believe is meritless. We think we've done the appropriately behaved through that, but we'll let the courts decide.
You know, I spoke with her attorney, Jeffrey Grodner, who said the most important thing they hope to accomplish is to make the city rethink the entire manner in which this was handled. Is this something that the city needs to rethink about how this whole situation was handled?
Well, look, we've spent a lot of time over the last months hearing from lots of people about what do they like about the market, what do they don't like about it, how can it be run better, how should it be run differently. There's, as you might guess, not unanimity on that, but we certainly welcome people's suggestions about that. I think the basic, actually next week, the Parks Board will make the final decision on what are the rules of behavior for guests and visitors and patrons at the market. My expectation is, and my recommendation is, that we continue the limitation on political activity right in the market. I don't know that everybody imagines, if you opened that up, if you said anybody can demonstrate, bring whatever signs they want, our market can really become simply a kind of a political free-for-all with all kinds of views expressed, and we can't stop one or another view from being expressed, and it would change the nature of it from being kind of a farmer's market to becoming a kind of a public meeting space with speakers and signs, and I think the farmers themselves would prefer that not to happen, as do we.
I wanted to ask you about the convention center expansion. It seemed like it hit another roadblock a week ago. Kind of two sticking points, and one I'm hoping you can explain to me, because I had a hard time trying to understand the membership on the CVC, which
yes.
That's the Convention Visitors Commission,
yeah.
Which the city wants equal representation on with the county,
yeah.
But there are different ways that the city and the county want to have those five members.
Five
now, two are appointed by the commissioners, right?
Correct.
And that's agreeable upon both.
Well, let's back up a second. First of all, I think we're getting quite close. We're anxious, as you know, to move this forward, and I think the Capital Improvement Board, we're really close to getting that done, so that's a good thing. As expected, there are issues that come up. The basic point was, let's be sure as we create a CIB, Capital Improvement Board, that we have equal representation in this process, and there are really two boards, the CIB and the CVC, as you mentioned, and the agreement in principle was that both of those boards should have equal representation representation by city and county. The CVC is a little complicated because it has five seats. One of them is actually by state law designated to be the union, Memorial Union director or leader. And then there are four others that are split up, and we're just trying to work out with the county exactly how you make that five-member body evenly appointed. And there's between the four, there's one that's unrestricted, and then there are three that have to be hoteliers. So figuring out how to let the county and the city evenly appoint those is what we're working
three
on.
Three have but to be work with the hotel.
Yes.
Okay.
And one is kind of free for whomever.
And so that's what you were debating about, taking turns year per year and so forth. So there's not another meeting until March, something early March, and hoping that both can be on the same page. And that's what you're working on now.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes and staff working on it. And I hope we can get resolved. We're actually encouraging that the CIB be created now. And we think those appointments, we figure out a way to make that happen and let them get started, because it's actually been almost a year, not quite, from when we had the recommendations of the steering committee to say how to move forward. And we've had a kind of a long pause button that we're eager to move forward.
And the CIB, that's equal representation between the city and county. I saw online there's a way for residents to apply to be on the CIB. Does the city have something similar?
You can check in through my office or on our website and let us know if you're interested. The city will have three appointments, the county will have three appointments, and then we have a joint seventh appointment to fill out that body.
The last sticking point was the land that would be donated to the CIB. I don't know if that's the right term. Given, donated, or
contributed, or contributed. Dedicated. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The second sticking point was the land that was bought from the innkeeper's tax that the county, I guess, owns, and the city would like all of that to go to the CIB to be able to use however they want to see. The county says that that's not necessary. So is that a point that both of you can compromise on?
Well, I think it's an important point. I think there's room to figure out a path forward. From the city's perspective, there's quite a bit of land that was bought over the last 20 years, actually, through the innkeeper's tax to focus on expanding the convention center and making that possible. Our view is all of that land ought to be contributed and dedicated to the CIB, which we are together creating to run the convention center, as the city is contributing all the money that is needed and appropriate for the convention center. We think all that land ought to be contributed and dedicated, even land that may not be immediately needed. Our view is, look, we're creating the CIB to run this thing for decades, and that's the group, we both appoint them, that's the group that should have the ability to plan and design and have expansion plans ready. The county, I believe, wants to hold on to land, which would mean if 10 years from now the CIB thinks, hey, this expansion to the west is appropriate, they would have to go to the county and ask permission. And the county could say yes or no, and we just feel that really should be decided now. And one other point to make is we think we know where the convention center should go, but we don't know for sure, and there hasn't been all the due diligence and environmental studies and all those things. And so having the flexibility for the CIB, we think, is quite important.
But then the county is saying that's a lot of land to hold for 10 years and not use.
Well, the CIB should use and hold the land that it thinks it may need. You may know we have CIB, the precursor to the CIB, the county's building corporation, has amassed all of this land over 20 years, which has made the expansion possible, and we think that's important.
I want to get an update, too, on what you talked about January 1st, the climate change tax. I think it was a 0.5% increase in income tax in the county. Do you still see this being something that you're going to help move forward?
I do, Joe. Technically, it's a local income tax, and then technically, it's in the economic development income tax bucket. We think economic development means sustainability and focuses on how do we become a more sustainable city, which part of which is dealing with our energy and greenhouse gas profile, and part of which, frankly, is how do we become a city in the new economy that how do we be a city in the new economy that welcomes everybody and works for everybody so that there are jobs and affordable housing and ways to move around, mobility with transit and other opportunities. How do we improve the efficiency of our buildings? All those things are part of creating a more sustainable city. And it's interesting, you know, we've done two city surveys. Those city surveys tell us we want more affordable housing. We want more transit. We want more trails. We want to support social services so people who are struggling get a leg up to help them succeed. And this is giving us the resources to do that. So I'll be talking about it Thursday night at the State of the City. That's coming up this week at the Buskirk at 7 o'clock, and continuing to talk, how do we become the city that we want to become? We're entering the 2020s. Many people tell us, both from a science perspective and frankly from a society perspective, this decade's critical for how we move forward. Are we going to do what we need to do to help the planet, do our part? Are we going to make our city more more workable for people who don't earn a lot of money and for people who may be struggling with mental illness or substance abuse or homelessness? And I think this is a chance for us to do some major progress over the next 10 years.
And there was an estimate of about $8 million that would bring the city for this initiative. But I guess my question would be, why, if budgeting is about prioritizing, why not cut something down at the lower end of the budget to be able to make room for that sure. $8 million rather than adding another tax on residents?
Yeah, no, I think, look, most people don't know that Bloomington's in very good fiscal shape. We have a strong reserve. Most people don't know that Bloomington is a very low tax jurisdiction. If you ask most people, they'd say, oh, Bloomington, progressive, liberal, must have high taxes. Actually, we have the lowest income tax of the seven counties contiguous to us, the lowest in terms of income tax rate. We have among the lowest property tax rates of all the 20 cities, biggest cities in Indiana. So we're a very low tax jurisdiction. It means we don't have the ability to do some things we want. We have a very popular bus system, but we don't have Sunday service because we can't afford it. We have a lot of bus routes that only run every hour, which makes it hard for people to use that bus system. We have huge affordability needs in our housing, but we don't, you know, the federal support for affordable housing has been cut more than half over the last 20 years. So Bloomington needs resources to become the kind of city we want to be. The income tax is about the only option that we have as a local jurisdiction. We don't have home fiscal rule, but the state allows us to do this tax. And even if we pass this 0.5% tax, we'll be the third lowest of the seven counties in and around Monroe County. So we're still a low tax jurisdiction even after this.
We're running out of time, but I wanted to give a chance to, you talked about it, the State of the City address is Thursday night, open to the public. Can you give us a little preview about what's going to happen?
Well, we'd love everybody to come down. It's a great evening. We have music and spoken word from others, and then I do an address. It starts at 7, doors open at 6:30 in the Buskirk. It's an annual time for me to be able to talk about what we've been doing, what's coming up. And this year, I'm looking a little farther down the road, kind of looking a decade perspective as we head into the 2020s. So I encourage everybody to come and be part of it.
Do you have any other announcements? Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, you should know, I think we're just putting out a release. It was neat news we got just last night that Climate Disclosure Group, an international group, which has 10,000 cities, of which we're one that are part of that. We were given an A rating by them. There are only 105 cities in the world that got an A rating for our transparency and disclosure and plans on climate change. So I'm really proud of that. There are only 8 Midwestern cities. It shows that Bloomington is trying to live our values. We have more to do, but that was a nice word encouraging us to keep doing what we're doing.